Hello, welcome back to the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as always, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris? How was your long summer?
It's been pretty relaxing, and, you know, kind of despite the respite, you know, we haven't really been talking. You and I haven't talked in 125 days. Like, the last time we recorded this podcast was April 25th, I believe. And since then, it's been a very quiet summer, but I feel like it's flown by. I mean, at least for me. I mean, having the World Cup, like, smack dab in the summer was fantastic. You know, we've had preseason football the last month for the NFL. We've been able to talk camp for the last month. It's been, you know, a pretty solid summer. How was yours?
It was pretty good, too. I can't really complain too much. I didn't really get World Cup fever until the end of it. But it was like the whole experience was pretty fun. I don't know, the World Cup is kind of easy just to dive into. Shockingly, if you don't really care about soccer.
Yeah, I feel like the problem for me with soccer is that I just don't know any of the players. Like, you know, I know that that Ronaldo, he obviously plays for Portugal, and, you know, he's like the highest paid player in the world, and he's playing in, I don't know, one of the Premier Leagues in Europe. Like, I don't know any of the leagues in Europe. I don't really follow the standings. I know there's, like, the process of promotion and relegation that affects it and makes it a big deal. But, you know, I just don't follow, like, international soccer. And obviously, you know, the MLS even less so. I mean, I probably will so now that, like, FC Cincinnati is going to move up to the MLS next season. But it's really the World Cup where it's just like, it's like the Olympics for soccer. And it just gets really, everyone gets into it. And the stadiums are always loud. There's a lot of energy. The games this year have been so close and really intriguing. Even for me, I'm like the most casual soccer fans. And it was just a really fun tournament.
Yeah, like the Belgium, or not Belgium, like, I guess Belgium was a surprise. Like, Croatia was like the big, like, miracle run.
Right.
Yeah, it's a pretty good time.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, enough about soccer. This isn't the soccer podcast. This is a Bearcats Blogcast, and we're going to jump right into it with some breaking news that Joe Burrow is not going to be a Bearcat. And I say breaking news because this happened like 2 months ago or 3 months ago when he decided to choose LSU over Cincinnati. May 18th, it looks like. So if you have been living under a rock for the last 3 months, this is breaking news. If not, we are the last people on the planet to talk about this. But Scott, what are your thoughts about this? He was ultimately down to UC and LSU, flirted with North Carolina a little bit. Obviously, this is Joe Burrow of the Ohio State, former quarterback, former four or five-star quarterback Joe Burrow, chose LSU over Cincinnati. What are your thoughts here?
It was a pretty, like, devastating blow, at least, like, to the quick rebuild part of everything, because Burrow would have 100% started. He was just named the starter at LSU, so he would have definitely started at Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's how long we've been off, is that he not only, you know, visited UC, LSU, and flirted with North Carolina, he not only picked LSU, but he was also named the starter at LSU yesterday. And, yeah, we have not done this in a while. Go ahead.
I like it. Just for, like, the continuity of, like, Luke Fickell's era, like, that was a pretty big blow. It's like now they're starting Hayden Moore again. And we have to ride that, like, oh, is he good? He's kind of good. He's kind of bad roller coaster all season long.
Yeah, it's definitely a big blow. And to your point, you know, he was going to start no matter where he chose. Like, he's not entertaining a job where he sits on the sideline for another year after doing so for two or three or however many it's been at Ohio State. Like, he comes to Cincinnati, LSU, he's going to start. The announcement at LSU yesterday was surprising to nobody. And you're right, like, if he has the ability to even start at LSU, he's definitely going to start at Cincinnati, even over a senior. It's massively disappointing because I feel like, you know, we're going into the 2018 season with more of the same expectations at the quarterback position. Now, I preface that by saying tea leaves, it sounds like it's a true 50-50 competition between, you know, the senior Hayden Moore and Desmond Ridder, which is really encouraging to me. We don't really know exactly who's going to be starting on Saturday. Fickell has his weekly press conference in a couple of hours, you know, as of us recording this. You never really know who's actually going to start until, you know, the season actually begins and we actually are able to kind of get a glimpse of what the coaches are seeing. But if it is Hayden Moore that goes throughout the season, I mean, yeah, to your point, it's we know what we have with Moore. We know he has a low ceiling. He's prone to having a lot of mistakes. Now, granted, you know, some of those mistakes were amplified by wide receiver drops last season, but he still threw a lot of bad passes and blew a lot of games last season. And you know, there hasn't really been any evidence that he's made improvements since his sophomore year. And it's going to be really, really discouraging if, to me particularly, if he's going to be the starter throughout the season.
Yeah, it's like, it just seems like we'll go through like the same ups and downs that we just dealt with last season. Like, we'll have like a little hot streak. Like, his numbers will look nice. And then, like, he'll just make poor decisions. Or the line will be terrible. And, like, his stats will just look, like, generic.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we can just dive into that topic, the quarterback topic. I do think there's actually a chance that, like, they could do something with Ridder. They probably won't because they didn't do anything with Ross Trail. But with, like, Moore being a senior, like, if the year starts going like it did last year, you could definitely make a change. But who knows? If, like, they're, like, looking like they'll make a bowl game, it'll probably just be Moore all year.
Yeah, I'm really curious what they actually do with Ridder this year. I mean, he... it seems like he's a lot closer to Moore this season than Trail was last season. And the big factor there is that Trail simply was injured last year, and he just could not get healthy. Now, he's since transferred out of the program. He's going to be at Arkansas State, sit out a year, and I guess in his mind, he's going to compete for a starting job in 2019. You know, so that ship has sailed. But Ridder has been relatively healthy for the spring and the fall, and he's been running with the first team offense, it sounds like, as much, if not more so, than Hayden Moore. Now, if you're a coach going into a year where you have a hot young quarterback or a reliable, if not mistake-prone senior, I can understand why Fickell might want to go with Hayden Moore for the UCLA game this Saturday and stick with him and see what he does for part of the season. My gut would be to do the same thing, at least for the UCLA game, run out Moore, see how he does, and then give him a short leash and go with Ridder. But I don't know. If we see the same Hayden Moore that we saw last season, I don't understand how they couldn't go to Ridder just to kind of see what he does for the rest of the season and going into Fickell's third year. Because, I mean, if they don't have a shot at a bowl game, you know, why not? Why not see what Ridder can do? And to a lesser extent, why not see what Ben Bryant can do? I mean, I believe that their plan is to redshirt Ben Bryant, but with the new NCAA rules of allowing players to see playing time in four games and still be redshirted, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him at some point this year too. But for the immediate future, it sounds like it's going to be Moore versus Ridder for that starting job.
Oh yeah, 100%. And it seems like it's actually like a real competition between those two. You're like, Matt, like Oper, he used to always push for Ross Trail, so he probably cried a lot when Trail transferred.
I know, I did too. Trail just had a higher upside, and, you know, his stats didn't look great, but he also had to go into situations where he was the third-string quarterback backed up against, I guess, technically second-string quarterback because Gunnar Kiel was a third-string quarterback for whatever damn reason. I'm not going to try to explain Tommy Tuberville's roster management, but he was a second-string quarterback going up against Houston defensive line that was one of the best in the country, and he threw two picks. I mean, I don't know if you can really fault him for that. And then he starts against I believe it was Miami, Ohio, and has an okay game, and then Hayden Moore gets healthy again and just starts from the rest of the season. Last season, he was just fighting injury and just couldn't see the field. If he was healthy, I still believe he would be the starter on this football team.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see, like, if he even fit in. But it just seemed like he was so far behind with his injuries that he, like, even fell behind Ritter. Like, Ritter has, like, it seems like pretty interesting upside if they can get him going into being, like, a big piece of the quarterback machine. So it seems like this coaching staff really believes in him.
Yeah, I'd be curious. You know, I haven't been to practice this year. I don't really do that thing anymore. But it sounds like Ritter kind of brings a little bit of that extra wrinkle to the offense by having more ability with his legs. He's also a little bit bigger. He's also just younger. I mean, he's not as nicked up as Hayden Moore is. Now, youth comes in experience, and it sounds like Ritter has been making those kinds of freshman mistakes in practice. But we've seen, even though Hayden Moore can be the perfect practice player, he still makes mistakes like throwing an interception on the first pass against Michigan last year. So obviously, whatever Moore is doing in practice isn't translating to the games, at least not into the start of the games when it really matters. You know, I don't really care if Hayden Moore throws up two or three touchdowns when UC's down by 20 or 30 points in the fourth quarter. Like, who cares? Like, you know, UC needs a good start on offense because that's gonna be their weakness for at least the next season. It sounds like the defensive line and the secondary and to an extent the linebacker core is gonna really have to carry the team for next season. I mean, the offense has gotta just not play mistake-free football this season to really keep up the pace. And it starts with Hayden Moore, unfortunately.
Like 20 touchdowns, 9 picks last year. Like, doesn't really stand out. 40 touchdowns, 27 picks, like, his career. It's, like, not really a great ratio at all. And it's, like, that's something he's definitely got to improve. He's got to be up, like, the, like, 25 touchdown, like, 7 picks for the season. If the team's gonna hit those, like, double their win aspirations. Which seems doable, like, given the schedule. But also, like, it looked doable last year and they won, like, 4 games.
Yeah, I mean, 12 of Hayden Moore's touchdowns came in the third or fourth quarter. I mean, UC has been behind in those games so many times. He's thrown 2 picks in the first quarter. He's kind of a late bloomer in a sense. I don't know. That's just who he is, and it's one of those situations where you rest on your laurels because you know what you have out of Hayden Moore, and you just kind of plan around those weaknesses. You know, you try to run the ball more. You try more shorter passes. You try a simpler passing offense to make sure he doesn't, you know, get, I guess, confused. Or do you roll the dice with a younger player with a bigger upside? And I can kind of see going into the first game the idea of going with either option, especially if you're trying to still figure out what your team can do in a live game action. You just kind of go with the known in Hayden Moore, and then you maybe roll the dice with Ritter later in the season. I could kind of understand that mindset. I just don't know what Fickell's going to really do on Saturday, and I think he's the only person that knows it as well.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But just given everything we've ever known, it just seems like it'll be more to start, like, the first half of the season, at least.
I would honestly hope it's not going to be Hayden Moore to start the first half of the season. Man, it would be, yeah, that would be really, really disappointing. Now, granted, okay, let's go with the flip of the coin. What if Hayden Moore has a breakout senior season? What if he fixed all of the issues this past offseason, you know, being in the second consecutive season in Mike Denbrock's offense? Maybe the receivers have helped him out a little bit more this season. He's certainly going to have more talent out there than he's had in 2017. Maybe he comes out and UC doesn't beat UCLA this year, but you know they start the season 3-1, and he has a pretty solid touchdown interception ratio, a 3-1, something like that. At that point, yeah, go with Hayden Moore for the rest of the season. Roll out Desmond Ridder and Ben Bryant in blowouts, or you know, one way or the other, just to get them experience going into next year. And you, like to your point as we started this podcast, if they're about to go bowling, sure, keep Hayden Moore out there. That's fine. And then sprinkle in Ridder and Bryant to get some experience. But yeah, if it's starting to go south, like, dear God, they get blown out of UCLA. Then they come back and they lose at Miami, Ohio. God forbid, squeak by Alabama A&M, lose at Ohio. They're 1-3, 2-2 heading into the AAC play. I don't know how they can really keep rolling Hayden Moore out there. At that point, Fickell, for his job security, he's got to play for a winning season in year three. Otherwise, he's got to be on the hot seat, right?
I don't know really about the hot seat. But it would be like the part where, like, you'd have to worry about getting the fan interest back up, because you can't just win the off season like recruiting wise and then not deliver on the field.
Well, I guess my point is that, like, so let's say they're 2-2 at best going into AAC play, and Fickell staring down a potential season where he doesn't go bowling again. I gotta figure. If his idea in his mind is saying, you know, we might win 5 or 6 games this year, like a bowl game is not an assurance, I feel like in his mind he needs to go with Ridder and or Bryant to start and get them experience, because then he can sell the fan base and his bosses on, yeah, we have an experienced quarterback going into year three who has higher upside than our previous quarterback. You know, don't put me on the hot seat yet. And I'm not saying he's on the hot seat now, but I feel like if he doesn't make a bowl game and he's still rolling Hayden Moore out there in week 12 or something like that, that makes no sense in my mind.
Oh, yeah, I think that's definitely a good point. And, like, if things, like, got to that point where, like, they were kind of progressing backwards.
Yeah.
I think that would definitely happen, because it seems like they should make a step forward this year. Like, whether, like, they're a contender in the league or not is one thing, but they should be making strides to competitiveness.
Yeah, you would hope. So my hope going into the season is continuing to set the building blocks for going into year three. I think we kind of talked about this in our conversation before the podcast. I mean, they were like 3 plays away from going 1-11 last year, a true year zero, which is like a disastrous scenario. No one would have really thought about heading into the season. I mean, if we look back at our conversations 2 years ago, we kind of figured this team had the talent to make a bowl, you know, to win 6 games, and who knows what would have happened to that bowl game, but, you know, continue building into year 2 and 3. Really, last year seemed like a year zero, where it was a full reset. The team was a lot worse than we had expected. The talent was just not where it should have been. Our expectations were a lot higher than what they probably should have been. Going into this season, I feel like they really need to build more momentum going into year three. If they can get to a bowl game, awesome. That's great. And then year three, go for 8, 9, 10 wins. Awesome. But I don't know if Hayden Moore can get him to that point. And if it looks like it's going south, if they're really 2-2 going into AAC play with, you know, squeaker wins over like Alabama, A&M, Miami, or Ohio, I'd be really suspicious about what's going on in Luke Fickell's head if he's still rolling Hayden Moore out there and not going with the youth movement at quarterback.
Yeah, because at some point, if, like, you're struggling, it seems like you just have to lean into it. It's like,
right,
of just where the program is, like, where a lot of your guys, like, they still have some, like, upper-class standouts, like, I guess you could count Moore and Khalil Lewis, like, for sure. And, like, some of the defensive line are, like, big-time senior players. But then, like, the offensive line is really young. Your secondary is really young. Like, there's a lot of, like, good production, like, Pierre Young is back. He's even young. And, like, your linebackers look like a solid core. Like, there's, like, a lot of youth. Like, you hope that they start turning it up at the end of the season. Just coincidentally, when, like, the conference schedule gets really hard. So, it'll be interesting to see where this team goes. Because, like, I think 7 wins is pretty doable.
Yeah, I'm with you there. When you look at the win probability on SB Nation, I mean, they're favorites in exactly 5 games. So they are favorites against Alabama and A&M, UConn on the road, Tulane at home, Navy at home, which, what? East Carolina at home.
Like, the Navy is like a toss-up, 54%.
Okay, yes, it's a toss-up. Still 4% in UC's favor, so I'm going to call it I'm going to call them their favorite. So, fine. All right. If we're not going to call them, we're not going to call them a toss up, or we're going to call them a toss up. They're favored in 4 games. A toss up against Navy.
A toss up against Ohio University. That's 46%.
See, I look at that one. If you look at Miami, Ohio, they have a 40% win probability against Miami, according to SB Nation. I think they're calling that a road game, even though everyone in this region knows that it's being played at Paul Barnes Stadium and can become a pseudo home game for UC. Miami should probably be better going into this season under year three at Chuck Martin, pending he doesn't make any weird fourth quarter decisions that cost him football games. But so I'm a little suspicious about that 40% win probability. Like, I feel like the win probability of Ohio should be lower than that against Miami, Ohio. Like, yeah, Ohio is a 46%, Miami is 40%.
Yeah, so like, that's even another toss-up, because that game, like you said, is at Paul Brown Stadium, and they have that marked as a road game. So, like, you're looking at, like, a case where, okay, and even then, we don't know how good some of these teams are. Like, UConn will probably still be bad. But, like, Temple, like, they played really well at the end of last season, but, like, will they continue that, like, sustained run? SMU, like, lost, like, all their good players.
Yeah, and their head coach. Yeah, I mean, it's... I feel like if we're talking about 2018 as a true year one, where you have laid some building blocks for success in the future, you're looking to build on that momentum going into a... quote, year two, where you really start putting wins on the scoreboard, in the schedule. The schedule this season really sets up nicely for that. I mean, it's very backloaded. You take UCLA out of the picture. Their first 5 games are Miami, Ohio, Alabama, A&M, Ohio, UConn, and Tulane. I mean, out of that 5, Ohio has got to be the scariest opponent there, just because Ohio has a tendency to win a lot of games. I mean, I think – I can't remember how the AP pulled the MAC this year. I think they're favored to win the MAC, at least MAC East. And that's why that little win probability of 46% for UC seems a little high for me. But, you know, if you get by – let's say between Miami, Ohio, and Tulane, you go 4-1. With a loss to Ohio. Then you try to win one with your youth movement, picking up momentum going to the end of the season as they've gained experience. You have Temple, SMU, Navy, USF, and UCF. They've got to be able to squeeze a win out of a couple of those games, right? Like, to your point, Navy was a toss-up. They have South Florida at home. And Central Florida is going to be a bear on the road, but they're also undergoing a coaching change. Who knows how Mark Heppel is going to do down there? And to your point, SMU, even though it's on the road, they've lost a lot of their players and their head coach. I mean, they could squeak a win out of there. You never know. I think the schedule works out well for them this season if we're trying to consider this another rebuilding year.
I do too. And but the infusion of talent this program has gotten, like, who knows how much some of the freshmen will play. Like, any time you bring in a top 50 class to, like, a group of 5 program, like, that's a pretty big boost. And if, like, some of those guys turn out pretty well, like, by the end of the year, like, those games look a lot more interesting than they do now. Because, I mean, that slate does look pretty tough. Like, two road games against teams that went to bowls last year. And then Navy-USF at UCF. Like, just, like, they got pretty much hammered by all those teams last season.
Yeah, you never know. From like a youth movement standpoint, it sounds like, I mean, Malik Van's gonna at least be in the rotation of the defensive line. I mean, UC is absolutely loaded. Like, the defensive line is gonna be UC's bread and butter this year. If the defensive line is having a good game, UC will be in most every game that they'll play in this season. And Malik Van's gonna be a part of that. It sounds like Leonard Taylor is gonna get some run. Tavian Thomas is gonna get some run, even though the running back core is going to be absolutely stacked this year with a very, very deep rotation. I would not be surprised if this staff tries to roll out as many freshmen and get them experience this season and still redshirt them at the end of the year as long as they don't play more than four games. Even though Josh Wiley is undergoing surgery and will be back for a few more weeks, he could probably see some run this year. I think if they really start playing some of the youth early, and even if they don't redshirt them and continue to play them throughout the end of the season, yeah, I mean, they could steal a couple of wins there at the end of the year and maybe go bowling. Now, I think to our conversation earlier, yeah, if they are rolling going into that, you know, October, November timeframe, and they have a shot at a bowl, and Hayden Moore isn't costing them games, I think it makes sense to continue to play him at quarterback. But if he's costing them games going into October, November, and they haven't really ran out Ritter or Bryant, I would be really, really nervous about them stealing, you know, a game or two against Temple, SMU, Navy, South or Central Florida.
Yeah, that's definitely like a fair point. Even East Carolina, like, for as bad as they were, like, UC went there last year, like, got gave up like 48 points.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those where you really don't know. And like the consistency is going to be, I think, the key to this season, like from everybody. Like the pass rush last year, like for as good as like the defensive line could be, was terrible. And like you'd like to see a consistent pass rush this season, which I think is like the number one key. So if they can get any kind of pass rush, like, maybe your secondary just doesn't get picked apart again. And especially since they lose so much on the secondary. And, like, the guys they bring back aren't really, like, proven commodities. Even, like, right, the names that got playing time. It's like, you have to get something out of your, like, front line. And, like, the linebackers were really consistent. Because somebody had to be. But if, like, that front line can be, like, dominant this season. Or not even dominate, just good. I think that gives you like a much better chance to win some of these games. I think you just turn around and look at the offensive line too, which loses pretty much everybody notable. And you really have to wonder like what they're going to get out of the running game. Because like you have two really high-profile backs, and Warren has looked pretty good in camp, everybody says. He had 100 yards in like a scrimmage game. And like he and Dokes were like a really good combo. Like Dokes had a really strong period last season. Like if you can get those guys going, like that takes a lot of pressure off Hayden Moore, and like maybe the offense can actually do things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It really does come down in the trenches. And what's really oddly encouraging to me about this season is that Fickle and the staff looked at the front seven, and they said, okay, our defensive line is so damn strong. Let's boost the linebacker core by taking Brian Wright, one of your biggest stars, off the line and make him a middle linebacker. And that does a couple of things in my mind. A, it gets Malik Van a spot on the edge, which is outstanding. Whenever you have a chance to put a Malik Van as a true freshman in a spot to build experience, you do that 1,000% of the time. And it tells me that even though the linebacker core might have been a little on the weaker side going into this season, they decided the defensive line was so damn strong going into the year, they took one of their biggest pieces and moved him to linebacker, essentially improving and making both units all the more stronger. So yeah, to your point, it really does come down to the trenches and how the front seven can really control the line of scrimmage and get a pass rush. And then on the other side of the ball, I still don't know what we see out of the offensive line. Coming out of camp, you know, I was watching a lot of Chad Brendel's videos and interviews with Luke Fickell. He pretty much said that each of his videos in sequence when he was asked about the offensive line, it was all, yeah, we're still trying to figure it out. And we still, you know, we're going through scrimmages on a weekly basis, and we're coming out of the scrimmages getting to a point where we can name a starting five with another 2 to 3 men to rotate in there. But we're still trying to figure it out. And even after his last video, he kind of had an idea of who he wanted on the offensive line, but he was still pushing Denbrock to name that starting five, which is really, really not where you want to be going into the season with a Hayden Moore type quarterback behind you, and when you're really going to really want to rely on a strong running game going into the year to really carry your offense. So but I'm really
even on a more micro scale, well, then you're going to a game against a team so talented like UCLA. Like, I know people like down on UCLA, but like they still have a lot higher like floor of talent than UC does. And like their players are going to be like bigger and faster than the offensive line, so it's going to be really interesting to see how they even handle like the week one struggle, because they're going to be probably rotating guys in and out to try to find something.
Absolutely, and really the litmus test starts on week one, unfortunately, with UCLA. I kind of wish we had an Alabama A&M to start, and you know, they weren't playing a September 1st game in Los Angeles against UCLA, against a Chip Kelly-type coach offense, or team in general. But yeah, that's the litmus test they'll just have to try to overcome this Saturday. And yeah, to your point, if we're seeing an offensive line breaking down against UCLA, that's going to be really concerning going into the season. On the flip side, if Denbrock and Fickell named their five starters and they know who the backups are going to be and the line looks adequate against UCLA, that'd be really encouraging going into the season. We'll just kind of have to wait and see.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the number one thing to watch for, because like with the skill positions, we pretty much like know like what's coming back. Most of the receivers like are back from last year. Like you have a standout in Lewis. Like Dokes and Warren, even though like we like to see what they can do like when they're the top two. Like we saw enough last year to be, I think, pretty excited to see like what their production could be. Like without like Mike Boone taking like a bulk of the carries. It's like it's really the line which is gonna make the big deciding factor, I think, in how that game goes. And of course, like we didn't talk about special teams at all, which was like the biggest bugaboo of last season, where their special teams were just so horrendous, especially in the kicking game, where like any drive that ended at like the 20 was a mystery. If they were even going to score. And most of the time the answer was no, they weren't going to score if their drive stopped there. It's like that's going to be another huge part of the year. It's like they had one area where they just got completely dominated in every single game. That was the kicking game. So, just finding like an answer there for the whole entire season is going to be, I think, really important, because you can't just give away points. And like, especially last year when they struggled so hard to get to score in some games, it's going to be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, to your point, we didn't even talk about the kicking game, and big news there is that Andrew Gantz isn't going to be on the team anymore. He's at Northern Illinois, and it seems like, I mean, Cole Smith is going to be the hot young kicker coming out as a freshman, but sounds like Ryan Jones might be the guy at kicker. You know, he might do double duty between punter if James Smith can handle it. I mean, James Smith is an all-conference punter, so he should be fine there. But, yeah, the kicking game is going to be a big question mark this year. Gantz had his own run of injury issues that really hampered his ability to live up to the level that he came into this program at with. And we just don't know what Cole Smith and Ryan Jones can do for this team next year. And that's going to be a big thing, especially if you're talking about a team like UC that's going to be built around defense. you got to plan ahead and plan to have those close, you know, 20 to 17, 14 to 17, you know, even hell, shit, 13 to 10 games against, like, UConn or something like that, where the kicker has a bigger impact on the game than than in shootouts. So yeah, that's going to be a big factor this year, and that's another question mark that we just don't really have answers to, and we won't really have answers to until, hell, I don't know, October maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, because like the coaching staff just like completely stopped trusting the kickers like after a certain point. They went through three kickers last year. Like UC missed three extra points. They only attempted six field goals over 40 yards. They were 8 of 11 on, like, the kicks under 40. So it's, like, not even, like, they had really big success there. It's, like, that's really something huge because for the last, like, what, like, two or three years, like, they've just been terrible at finishing drives in the red zone. So that's going to be something that they're really going to have to get better at, especially with, like, a senior quarterback. Like, if they can do, like, just finish some of, like, the drives that they have, like, that really, like, obviously, scoring points helps you win. There's your football tip of the day.
I didn't know I was talking to Trent Dilfer. Yeah, it's one of those situations where you have an offense that has a shaky offensive line, and maybe shaky isn't the word that I should use. I guess questionable offensive line. We don't know what to get out of them. You have a quarterback that's mistake-prone and has thrown mistakes near his own red zone and heading into the opponent's red zone. You have a running game that is reliant on that shaky offensive line, and you have a kicking game that we don't really know what to expect out of them going into next season. And, yeah, finishing drives, to your point, has been one of the biggest issues with this team the last couple of years, and if they have the same issues going into next year, it's only going to put more pressure on an untested kicking game.
It sounds like a lot of these factors are a big reason why UC is a 15.5-point underdog to UCLA. Like this.
It dropped. Oh, it dropped from 16.5. So good news, right?
The over-under did rise from 57 to 62. So it sounds like everybody's expecting a lot of points. Let's dive into this one. Obviously, like, UCLA is also a tough team to read. Like, Chip Kelly, their coach. And it sounds like a lot of they lose, like, a franchise-type quarterback, first-round draft pick, and Josh Rosen. But they were, like, only 6-6 last year, which was really disappointing. But at the same time, they seem like they could be interesting. I don't know if they'll be good, but they'll be interesting. Kind of a tough team to get a read on. But just like the talent level seems to give them a boost and having the game at home. Like, what do you think about this one? What's your read?
I'm very excited to watch a game where Cincinnati faces Chip Kelly, who is one of the most intriguing college coaches to ever coach the game. At the same time, I am extremely nervous and frightened to have to face his offense. To your point, they lost Josh Rosen to the draft, which is that's great news. Yeah, I do not want to face a Josh Rosen in a Chip Kelly coached offense. On the other side of that, Chip Kelly is known for his types of offenses, regardless of who's at quarterback. You know, the things we can expect on Saturday is a lot of the read option. He basically mastered that. We can expect a lot of quarterback runs. We can expect a lot of sideline to sideline passes. We can expect an accelerated tempo on offense. He ran some of the fastest offenses in both the NFL and with the Eagles and with Oregon, and which doesn't bode well for a UC team that's going to be playing in probably like 80 degree weather in the middle of Los Angeles. We can probably expect him to put up a lot of points. Now, granted, this is year one, And that UCLA is truly in a year one. They're not a year zero with a full, you know, bottoms up rebuild that Fickell had to go into. So UCLA is in a year one. Kelly's still probably installing that offense, but we should expect them to put up a good share of their points in this game. It's going to be tough to keep up, and that's why, you know, to your point, yeah, the over-under has risen in the last couple of days. Couple of things working in UC's favor. No Josh Rosen, like we talked about. UCLA apparently has had six players suspended for the season, including a running back who was a former five-star recruit and could have been in the mix this. It could have been in the mix on Saturday, despite having injuries in the over the last month. They've lost. They've gone with a true freshman at center against a very potent UC defensive line, which is really encouraging. And, you know, say what you want about this coaching staff. Having a better familiarity with their personnel and, you know, having the players in year two is a big deal when you're facing a team that has only been with the staff for a few months now. So, you know, 15.5 points sounds right, but, you know, UC should be able to hang in this game, at least in the beginning. I'm not sure what to really expect out of them because, you know, this is game one on the road against a P5 opponent and who's being coached by Chip Kelly, but I should expect UC to hang in this game, at least in the first half. What are your expectations, Scott?
I kind of am with you on certain aspects of your preview. Because this seems like the type of game where, like, either they keep it close for, like, a half, and then, like, maybe, like, they just, like, kind of get it poured on the second half. Or it's like UCLA is going to just come out on fire. And, like, UC really doesn't really know what to do. Like, what to expect, because nobody really does with UCLA, except besides the fact Chip Kelly's their coach. And, like, going against his scheme with college players was a lot harder than doing it with pro players. So, that'll be interesting to just see, like, where they are. Because if, like, UCLA gets it going and, like, gets that machine rolling fast, it's going to be a long day. But, like, if UC can hang in there and, like, give them hell from the beginning, maybe, like, they can stick around and, like, make it close. But it's going to be, obviously, a really tough game.
Yeah, my hope here is that UC really, really slows it down. Because, you know, the first thing that Chip Kelly's going to want to try to do, he's going to want to if he gets the ball first, he's going to want to try to score within a couple of minutes, and he's obviously going to go for 2 points. I think there's a stat out there. When he was at Oregon, I think he only kicked a field or kicked an extra point on his first drive like two or three times over his multi-year tenure at Oregon. He's going to want to try to get on the board quick. He's going to want to try to push the pace. UC has to slow that down. They cannot play at the pace that UCLA plays. They can't have Hayden Moore passing more than 25 times in this game. Now, granted, if they're down 28 at halftime, yeah, you gotta air it out in the second half. But they've got to play a run first kind of offense. They've got to control the line of scrimmage on the defensive side of the ball. They've got to force UCLA into long third downs, and they got to try to get to the quarterback at least a few times in this game. You know, whether that is, you know, holding them on a read option or just a flat out sack, they've got to get to the quarterback. And I'm really curious what UC comes out with from a scheme standpoint. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to blitz and over blitz on Kelly's offense to at least start. Because, I mean, he's going to eventually start to play into those blitzes and those hat-on-a-hat matchups at the line of scrimmage in the second half. But they've got to establish a tempo up front quickly. They've got to establish the mindset that, yeah, we're gonna come after you defensively. We don't really care who you are. You know, kind of that hit him in the mouth kind of mentality. Now, granted, you want to back off as Chip Kelly starts to, you know, play against that pressure and, you know, if you're going to pressure on one side, he's going to start to run to the other pretty quickly. He's going to figure that out quickly. But, you know, they got to establish a tempo up front to establish that line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball and, you know, win the time of possession game. I think that's the biggest key on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because, like, if you can keep UCLA off the field, like, that's going to be huge. But a quick correction on what you were saying. UCLA didn't name a quarterback yet. Because they could still start Wilton Spate, like the former Michigan
quarterback. Oh, wait, you're serious?
They still haven't named a starter.
Is Wilton? Could Wilton Spate actually start on Saturday?
He's one of their contenders to start.
Concrete feet and all?
Former elite prospect.
I would be shocked. I would be shocked. I will drive down to Louisville and pay you $1,000 and hand you $1,000 cash if Will Spate starts on Saturday.
That he probably won't start.
For my sake, I hope he doesn't start. For UC's sake, I actually really do hope he does start, because that would be awesome. Try to make Will Spate run, even an 8 or 9 second 40 time would be hilarious to watch on Saturday.
So, you got to think, even if like they started Spate, we would see all three, like at least one of like the other quarterbacks. So it sounds like everybody's really high on Dorian Thompson-Robinson, like the freshman you mentioned. So, yeah, so like they're going to see a lot of different looks at quarterback, probably.
We'll see what kind of happens on Saturday in terms of personnel. It's kind of like an advantage in the sense that, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier. I like having the FCS game to start the season, especially when you're in another rebuilding year. But it's kind of almost to UC's advantage that UCLA hasn't really seen much of them this season. I mean, they have a lot of tape on Hayden Moore. They have a lot of tape on some of the defensive linemen, the running backs, obviously. But, you know, having an influx of talent could be to UC's advantage because they're going to be putting a lot of new personnel out there.
Yeah, it's really one of the things that makes this game really intriguing. Because it's like the first game's almost like a self-scouting game. Because you really don't know what to expect from, like, some of these things. Like, you know the scheme to expect. It's like you see Briggs Luck, a lot of the same coaches back and, like, the same quarterback. But, like, you never really know. Because, like, then UCLA, on the other side, it's like a lot of roster turnover themselves and, like, a whole new coaching staff. So, like, it really puts, like, anything in play. So it should be a pretty fun game. Like you would think, unless like UC gets like beat by like 40 points.
Yeah, that's definitely the nightmare scenario. My expectation of this game is that UC will lose. I don't really have an expectation that they'll win. I kind of had the same expectation I have with the UCLA game that I had with a lot of the games last year where UC was an underdog. Show progress, play hard. I mean, you know this team coached by Fickell is going to play hard until the final minute. And keep it close. I mean, if they can wind up keeping it close and losing by less than 15.5 points, that's a win in my book. This is almost like a throwaway game in my mind. I have it chalked up as a loss no matter what really happens. But if UC can keep it close and show that they made progress from, you know, last season to this season, that's going to be encouraging for me going into the rest of the year. I have them losing something like 40 to 30, something like that, like a 10-point loss. That's where I have it.
I kind of think it's going to be somewhere like within the spread. Like 45 to like 27, something like that.
Okay.
Like maybe UCLA just like adds on late. So I think like early they'll be able to keep pace with UCLA. It's just like the thing that like the group of five teams have like the big disadvantage is like all the Power Five teams have so many different guys to just keep throwing at you. Like their depth is a lot. Is a lot, and like it really like starts to drain on some of these like rosters where the talent falls off a little bit after like your main stars.
Yeah, absolutely. Cincinnati is rolling out something like 72 underclass, 72% of the roster is under as underclassmen this season. They're talented. I mean, no doubt, Fickell has really loaded the roster with raw talent. But if it gets to a point where you have to continuously churn through that talent in game one against established P5 talent, I mean, to your point, that's just a UCLA's advantage. I think. I don't think either of us expect them to win, but I think they just need to put on a competitive show on Saturday, and I'll be happy.
And like you can't really understate like going out to Pasadena and like playing in the Rose Bowl. Like that's just gonna be an experience that some of these guys have never even will never face again. That's like playing in front of so many people, like in such a big stadium.
Yeah, exactly. It should be, yeah. I'm more viewing this as more of an entertainment experience than like a sporting experience. Like, I don't expect Cincinnati to win. I expect to learn a lot of things about the team afterwards. I'm hoping a lot of those are positive, but I'm just kind of more hoping it's going to be an entertaining game that I don't turn off at halftime.
In some ways, it kind of seems like that game against Tennessee from a few years ago. Like, we're Tennessee, like,
yeah.
Like great shakes. But, like, they have a lot of, like, talent, and, like, I think some guys ended up in the pros. And, like, that was a big place. Like, obviously, I think people will put Tennessee's atmosphere over UCLA's. But still, like, you're playing, like, a gigantic stadium. And it's game one, so you would think UCLA's going to have a big crowd for Chip Kelly's debut. Like, so an atmosphere a lot of guys haven't faced. Like, going all the way across the country. And, like, they ended up getting, like, blown out in that Tennessee game. But they kept it close for a while. I could see something similar happening there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. If they play a game like they did against Tennessee a couple of years ago, you know, they have, a couple of sparks. They aren't able to kind of keep up at the end of the day. There's a few highlight reel plays from UC. That's a huge win in my book. That's fantastic. I'll walk away with that every day of the week.
So even if like you lose by, I don't know, like two or three touchdowns, like the effort is like the main thing. like we've like been kind of harping on, like playing like all 60 minutes, like just leaving it out there. Like I think that's the biggest like takeaway we could have. It's like if they like just play hard the entire time and like just don't quit. Like, which they did last year, which was, like, encouraging to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I guess, you know, if we're kind of going with the effort vein, I would expect this season we see the same kind of effort last year, but with, you know, obviously more positive results, either closer losses or more wins. And that's really the true kind of mark of, you know, building to better things in the near future. Do you have any other thoughts on the UCLA game, Scott?
A national game. Like, we can't, like, leave that part out either. It's like 7
That's true.
7 p.m. kick on ESPN. Like, obviously it's for UCLA, and because it's week one, and, like, Chip Kelly and all that stuff. But still, like, 7 p.m. ESPN start. Like, you get, like, a little, like, nice little national, like, platform before, like, the big primetime games start. Or at least, like, 45 minutes before Michigan and Notre Dame kickoff. That's pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I don't know how many. I'm just going to pull up the schedule here because I have not looked at it too extensively. Kill time, Scott. Talk about something.
Well, I can just tell you right now.
Thanks for being that awkward moment.
Zero other games are going to have the spotlight that this one has. Unless, like, you get to the end of November and, like, UCF is, like, running another, like, gigantic undefeated season. Like, that'd be the only other game that would have any type of spotlight like this. It's like, it's a major opportunity. If, like, they can, like, come out and, like, I don't know. Like, let's say they turn the tables, like, they beat UCLA by, like, 20 points. Like, that really boosts you up because, like, ESPN, like, Chip Kelly's debut, like, a lot of spotlight. Like, you put, like, a beating on UCLA, like, beat Miami, beat Alabama A&M 3-0, like, maybe, like, you end up with the top 25. So, like, I think there's a lot of, like, positive, like, boosts that could come from this game.
Yeah, that's a good point. They don't have any weeknight games this season other than East Carolina on Friday at the very end of the season. And
the day after Thanksgiving. So, I mean, like, yeah. It's not like a Friday night ESPN YouTube spot.
Oh, yeah. It's like basically like the Holiday Bowl back in the day when they used to play that on like Christmas Eve and nobody watched. Yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, if this is really the marquee time for UC to make a statement nationally is on the road. And you know there's going to be casual observers seeing Chip Kelly on the UCLA sideline and say, hey, I know that guy. I want to see what he's going to be doing. And, you know, they might tune into that game. There probably wouldn't be many opportunities other than somewhere in that, like, Navy, South Florida, Central Florida gambit that you might see UC on national TV again on ESPN or ESPN2. This is really the opportunity. That's a good point to make.
Did you have anything else about this game, or do you want to move on?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm like I said, I'm hoping for somewhere within like a 10-point loss at worst. I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of stayed around the line of 15.5 points. We don't have a blowout like we've seen far too many times over the last couple of years. But yeah, we can move on to kind of reviewing the schedule in general.
So, what's your official prediction for the schedule? Like, how do you think they'll turn out?
All of this is subject to change based on what happens Saturday, right? Like, we can change it without getting, like, mocked or booed?
Of course.
Okay. So, at this time, not knowing what Hayden Moore is going to do on Saturday, not knowing what the offensive line or defensive line are going to look like, I still think this is a bowl-eligible team. Loss at UCLA. I still think they'll beat Miami, Ohio at the neutral pseudo home game at Paul Brown Stadium in week two. Obviously, Alabama A&M should be a win. I still see them beating UConn, Tulane, and East Carolina to get to 5 wins. And then I don't think they beat Ohio. I think they can steal one against Temple, SMU, Navy, South Florida, or Central Florida. Like, to your point earlier, like, SMU seems like the most likely win with Chad Morris moving on and them losing a lot of players. But I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, stole one against Temple or Navy late in the season. Or maybe South Florida at home. We don't really know what South Florida is going to look like without Quentin Flowers at quarterback. You know, Charlie Strong's obviously going to, you know, coach them up, and they'll probably have a winning record. But you don't really know what to expect out of them. So I think there's 5 wins on the table there: Miami, Alabama A&M, UConn, Tulane, and East Carolina. And then I can see them stealing another win somewhere in AAC play to get to a bowl game.
Yeah, 6-6 is my prediction too, because like there's enough toss-up games that they should be able to take. Like, even if like they drop the game to Miami, like they start the conference slate out like pretty favorably. Like, UConn is, I don't know. Like, if UConn was somehow like actually good, like if they got blown out by UConn or like lost to UConn, like maybe we'd have something to worry about. But like Tulane, it's like still lower than UC, despite like their improvement. And like you catch Temple like early in the season, I guess like the middle of October is not early, but like early in conference play, like before, like hopefully before like they like catch fire like they did last year when you see play them. I like it. I like you take your chances with some of these teams. Like, it's kind of really hard to say what, like, Navy and, like, South Florida, and, like, I guess even to, like, a lesser extent, like, East Carolina and, like, even Central Florida will be, because November is a long time from now. But, like, you have to, like, think, like, they have a chance to win most of these home games. And if, like, they can just win their home games, that's a bowl team.
Yeah, and the reason I say that, like, I'd like to amend this prediction based on what happened on Saturday is because I want to see how the front seven does. If the front seven performs very well against UCLA, that gives me a lot of encouragement going into a game against, like, a Tulane and a Navy, both of which are at home. Navy blew out UC last year, but they've had some turnover there, and UC would now be familiarized itself with the triple option. Like they struggled with Tulane and Navy last year because they just simply hadn't seen it in forever. Like I don't remember the last time before they played Tulane and Navy last year that they actually played against a triple option offense. Now that the staff has that experience under their belt, and if they have talent along the front seven, if they prove that they can, you know, really get pressure in the backfield, really chase down a quarterback in that read option offense that Kelly's going to throw at them on Saturday, I have all the faith in the world that they can beat either or both of Tulane and Navy in that triple option ground pitch scheme. And that's why I'm really that's why I feel like they can beat Tulane. And then if they look good against UCLA, I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Navy the first week of November.
Yeah, definitely. Like if, like the pass rush is like the really the number one. Like that's really the thing I'm looking forward on defense. Like everybody is, because like it was so bad last year. Like with like all the big like names they had. But, like if it's better like at all, like I think it really changes the complexion of the defense because now you have that missing component that really like let you down last year.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, regardless of what Hayden Moore throws at them, however Hayden Moore in the offense does, if they can lean on a strong front seven and really control the line of scrimmage on a game-to-game basis, I mean, that's gonna help them win a lot of these tosses because, like we talked about earlier, our expectation going into the season should be a lot of low-scoring games. And if they can control the line of scrimmage and give the offense and the kicking game even just a shot at putting up a few game-winning points or, you know, getting a lead late in the fourth quarter because they're only down by a field goal or a touchdown or something like that, or just maintaining a lead. I mean, that's going to be huge for winning a lot of those toss-up games this year.
So who do you think is going to win the AAC East?
Oh, the East? I mean, my head says Central Florida. My heart kind of says Navy. And I don't know if it's my
Navy's
strange
not in the East.
What?
Navy's not in the East.
Oh, I'm sorry. Why did I say Navy? I'm stupid. Okay. It's been 4 months. Shut up. In that case, then it's got to be Central Florida, right?
Yeah.
You'd be dumb not to pick Central Florida. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Central Florida's going to win. I think there's a chance, like, maybe South Florida can beat them. But I think it's definitely UCF.
Yeah, I think it's all kind of a moot point because I think Memphis is going to run away with the conference as a whole. But, like, the strength of this conference is in the West. With Memphis, Houston, and, you know, Navy, who's always been there for some reason.
That's going to make it interesting. Like, not playing Memphis or Houston, obviously it got big boost to the bowl chances this season. It's like, instead you play SMU, who's not projected to finish very high. Like, and Tulane, I guess, is, like, an interesting team in the West. And Navy is probably going to finish second or third like they always do.
Yeah, Navy, you almost, like, no matter what season it is, you always pencil them into 8 wins. Like, they're going to finish around 8 wins no matter what happens. I mean, I'm kind of curious, as we're looking kind of at the makeup of the AAC in general, you know, can the AAC win another Access Bowl this year? You know, Central Florida is currently the highest-ranked G5 team just by way of finishing undefeated last year. I mean, we're not even talking about playoffs. I mean, the College Football Committee already fucked the G5 in terms of making the playoffs. They've already told everyone that even an undefeated G5 team that beats a lot of strong teams on their schedule can't possibly make the playoffs. That's just out of the question. But as far as like Access Bowl is concerned for one of those, for a chance to play like an Auburn at the end of the year, I'm not sure if there's like that undefeated team. Like, I think Memphis could win almost every single one of their games. But I'd be worried about like a Florida Atlantic, you know, sneaking in there and stealing that Access Bowl bid, or like, you know, one of the usual non-AAC, you know, suspects like the Boise State.
Next, Boise's like already had a big advantage over like a Memphis just by being ranked in the preseason top 25.
Right.
And like with the smaller conferences, we already know that has a lot to do with it. So if you're not ranked, you're never going to climb in the rankings. But if you're ranked, you have a chance. So that seems like Boise State, like if they don't stumble and fall, they're the big competition for the AAC. But I kind of feel the same with you on Memphis. I think that they're going to have a big year. And if like they finish strong, I think there's a chance they could pull it out. So I don't know about Boise State. It seems like they haven't really been consistent.
Yeah, Boise's been like weird the last couple of years. And I mean, they have, I guess part of it is the Mountain West is a lot better now than they were when Greg Peterson? I can't remember his name. Whoever's at Washington now, when he was coaching Boise State, like, the Mountain West now is a lot more balanced. Like, Wyoming's actually good again now that Josh Allen kind of helped lift them up. San Diego State is on par, if not better than Boise State on a year-to-year basis. Even like a Colorado State and an Air Force are pretty solid in general nowadays. So it's a lot more balanced. And yeah, to your point, like Boise State always seems to kind of like have a hiccup somewhere around or along the way, which kind of, that's why it makes me worried about Florida Atlantic. I mean, FAU outside of Oklahoma in week 1 has a really weak schedule playing in the Sun, I think are they the Sun Belt or are they CUSA?
I think they're Conference USA.
Okay. I mean, even so, I mean, they rolled through their schedule last year. They're probably going to roll through the schedule this year. I don't know if Central Florida can do the same thing. And then Memphis, they have a really easy schedule, especially non-conference. They play Mercer, Georgia State, South Alabama, and Missouri as their non-conference games. Somehow, Friday night game, that's why it's on ESPN. But, I mean, they don't play a marquee opponent, which is going to kill them in the college football playoff standings. So I don't know. If Memphis even goes like, you know, like 11-1, 12-1, you know, or if they lose a couple of games, I don't know if they can pass an undefeated Florida Atlantic. And I'm not sure if there's an undefeated team in the AAC this year.
I don't think there is either. But Florida Atlantic is definitely not going to go undefeated.
Like, well, maybe they won't, but like, even if they put on a good showing against Oklahoma, like, I don't see any other loss on that schedule.
Okay, fair point.
Like, yeah, I think they'll beat Central Florida. I honestly think they'll beat Central Florida.
And if they go 11-1 and they beat Central Florida, like, that would give them a huge boost. Just because they, like, say what you want about Lane Kiffin, but, like, he gives them, like, the name appeal. And, like, Boise, they do play, like, on the road at Oklahoma State, which is a pretty interesting early season game. But, like, their schedule also doesn't look very tough. Like, they do play San Diego State, but I don't know. It seems like they should be able to rock through the league. They only lost one league game last year.
Yeah, and it's, yeah. I don't know. I mean, we're probably kind of putting the cart before the horse because, I mean, no one outside of, like, what, Hawaii, Colorado State, Rice, like a couple of opponents have really played games so far this year. So, yeah, I don't know how the schedule's going to work out. I mean, even hell, people are saying FAU could upset Oklahoma, and then other people are saying they're going to get blown out. Like, who really even knows what the schedule's going to look like by this time in December? But yeah, it's I don't know. I'm not sure if an AAC team can secure the access bowl bid this year, but it seems like Florida Atlantic is the one to really claim it if there's anyone. Like, I still, like, to your point, I don't trust Boise State to go unbeaten. Not anymore.
Well, if we think like the AAC is going to, or at least like the leaders are going to have two or three losses, like that could really open up the door for Boise State, though.
Right. That's true.
That's going to be interesting.
That's true.
It's going to be interesting because, like, unlike like some of the like major power teams, it's like these games are so important for the like group of five because they can't really afford to lose non-conference games if they want to make the Access Bowl. Like, that's kind of what killed Boise last year. Mm-hmm. Is they lost that game triple overtime to Washington State, and they all got blown out by Virginia. And like also Central Florida went undefeated. But still at the same time, like losing some of these games just pushes you down like the down the ladder when you're trying to compete for one spot in one of these huge games.
Yeah, I mean, as we've seen, perception is like 90% of the selection committee's determinants on where you actually get slotted and how you're ranked. And I mean, hell, Central Florida had a tough enough time going undefeated and climbing even into the top 10 last year. Like, if you have one or two G5 losses, you're not even in the conversation anymore, it seems. And that's going to be the biggest pressure on the AAC this year without having, like, that Central Florida-type team going into the season. I mean, like we talked about, we don't know what the season's going to actually show by the end of the year. But at this point, even though Memphis might be the favorite to get double-digit wins, we don't know if they're going to actually go undefeated or what one or two wins for them would even look like in the rankings. I'm sorry, one or two losses would look like for them in the rankings.
Like, their big advantage, though, is that, like, that leaked season game against Missouri, because at least gives them another, like, standout game in the just the national picture instead of getting kind of, like, relegated to the background with just where the AAC's TV games are. Like, because they're not on, like, ESPN. Like, they're on, like, CBS Sports or, like, ESPNU or whatever.
Right.
Like, and, like, the perception thing is interesting because, like, UCF, they opened the season, like, on national TV. I guess ESPNU. Against, like, UConn. Like, if they, like, look, like, average or, like, okay, like, they took a step back. Like, that's going to be a major slide against them, like, all season long. Especially if, like...
Absolutely.
Especially if, like, they do lose, like, a Florida Atlantic or, like, a Pittsburgh. Like, in both, like, losable games that they do play at home. But that's, like, one loss that could really affect, like, how you look. And if they lose the league game, like, maybe that takes their spot out completely. Like, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of how this whole season shakes out. I mean, yeah, just from like a UC, an AAC, like a G5 state, but I'm just happy to have football back. Let's just say that.
Same here. I can't think of a better way to wrap up this episode than being excited about football again.
Absolutely. Yeah, and yeah, we're going to try to make this more consistent. We won't have 4-month lags going forward. We'll try to do it like roughly every Tuesday morning. Scott, I don't know when you're planning to post them. So sometime Tuesday, we're hoping to have podcasts up on a weekly basis. And, yeah, we look forward to hopefully a UC win on Saturday, but more probably a Pyrrhic UC loss. So go Bearcats.
And go Bearcats.